Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today, my very special guest is Colin Parent. Colin is a candidate running for the La Mesa City Council. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much, Miriam.
So, Colin, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you grew up, and why you're running for the council.
Yeah, I grew up in East County, San Diego. I went to Valhalla High School. Actually, my first job in high school was at the East County Economic Development Council. I was actually on La Mesa Boulevard, just a few blocks away from where I live today. I'm running for city council because I want to improve La Mesa. I think it's a wonderful town, and I think it can be better.
Well, it's my hometown. I grew up in La Mesa, too. Now, you're a graduate of UC San Diego, and you have a law degree, I understand. So you're bringing a legal background to the council. And you also held an appointed position under Governor Jerry Brown in his administration. Tell us what you did for the governor.
Yeah, so I was appointed by Governor Brown in 2011 to work at the Department of Housing and Community Development, which is the arm of state government that works on affordable housing and a variety of other programs. And my job there was to do several things. I did a reform of the state enterprise zone program, which was a tax credit program, and then also worked on a variety of things related to redevelopment agencies.
Very good. Well, it's nice to see someone with some expertise in those areas. You also are currently the policy counsel, in other words, the lawyer, for Circulate San Diego. Tell us a little bit about what that group is all about and how that translates into what La Mesa needs.
Yeah, so Circulate San Diego is a nonprofit in the San Diego region, and we are advocates for transit, for safe walkable streets, and for smart growth issues. And so we actually do advocacy at SANDAG and MTS and all around the region to make sure that we have, enough money spent for public transit, for pedestrian infrastructure, for those sorts of things. We also do a lot of what are called Safe Routes to School programs, where we will work with school districts or local small governments and identify the infrastructure needs that can be used to make sure that people can easily walk safely to school. So it used to be that people would send their kids to school on foot all the time. People would walk to their neighborhood school. And that doesn't happen very much anymore. Everyone drives their kids to school and drops them off. And so we're helping to retrofit some of those neighborhoods and some of those schools to make it, you know, safe and convenient for people to access their schools.
Very good. And of course, another key part of Circulate San Diego is advocating for greenhouse gas reduction, making improvements to transit, to get people walking, taking public transit, riding bicycles and so forth, so that it will help reduce climate change, which of course is a huge global issue right now.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, a lot of the transportation policy in California is really driven by greenhouse gases. And so SANDAG, the regional transportation agency, they're required to make certain choices that will have a net greenhouse gas reduction. And so when we advocate at SANDAG to spend more money on transit, it's oftentimes through the lens of greenhouse gas reduction. And same thing with the cities that are adopting climate action plans. We've been supportive of the city of San Diego's climate action plan and the adoption of a climate action plan here in La Mesa. And the idea being that in order to reduce greenhouse gases, we need to change the way that people are getting around.
La Mesa has been going through holding some public hearings about its climate action plan right now as we speak. What are your concerns about the current climate action plan that La Mesa has, and how would you change that?
Yeah, so the climate action plan at the city of La Mesa is in a draft form, and they came up with this draft about a year ago. And it had some pretty big problems with it. Primarily, it didn't have any enforceability measures. And so the idea was that it was sort of an optional plan. It was just sort of a guidelines about how things, you know, might be. And the problem with that is that the county of San Diego had a very similar plan without any enforceability measures, and it got thrown out in the courts. And the reason is that, it is state law in California that if you're going to update your general plan and you're going to have some greenhouse gas impacts from that plan, you have to have mitigation for that, and the mitigation has to be enforceable under law.
Sure. If you don't have any teeth, why bother?
Yeah, exactly. And so without having that enforceable measures for their climate action plan, La Mesa, if they were to have adopted that plan, would have put the city at risk for litigation. And our entire general plan could have been thrown out in the courts.
Wow. Big risk.
Yeah, it would be a big risk and also a big cost.
Now, I believe this is an area where you differ with the incumbents. I should mention that as of today, we're taping this interview, listeners, on Wednesday. The deadline to file to run for the La Mesa City Council is this Friday. As of today, other than Colin, who is a challenger, the other two candidates running are the incumbents, Councilwoman Ruth Sterling, who's been there for many, many years, and Councilwoman Christine Alessio. Tell us about their views on the climate action plan and how they're different from yours.
Yeah, so Ruth Sterling has said several times at hearings where this was being discussed that she doesn't believe that the climate action plan in La Mesa should be adopted with enforceability measures. Now, that is completely inconsistent with state law. If the council were to follow that direction, they would put themselves up. The entire city would be, you know, subject to lawsuit, and our entire general plan could be thrown out. It's irresponsible and it's incorrect. And Councilmember Alessio, I don't know whether or not she thinks that there should be enforceable measures, but she has said on numerous occasions that she doesn't believe that humans have a contribution to climate change.
Oh, my goodness,
and,
yeah.
Which is inconsistent with the substantial, overwhelming majority of climate scientists. And if you don't believe that humans are responsible for climate change, it's hard to imagine that you're interested in having humans
solve
climate change, right? And so I think we have a very fundamental disagreement about what our response to climate change should be. And let's just point out for a second here that, you know, adopting a climate action plan with enforceability measures doesn't mean that we're going to generate all sorts of new costs for the city or for its residents. You know, a lot of these climate action plans that have been adopted around the county include things like building bike lanes so that people are able to use a bike to get to
sure.
work. You know, increasing the amount of treescape in the city to reduce the heat island effect. You know, a lot of these things are just sort of common sense things that everyone can get behind. And it's unfortunate that people's sort of very outlier values are driving opposition to an effective climate change policy.
It's definitely a very serious issue, and certainly the U.S. has obligations under the International Climate Treaty that was just recently drawn up, and it's been, you know, the hottest year the last couple of years in a row, the hottest years on record for the entire planet ever, and 97% of the world's climate scientists agree that climate change is not only real, but that man's actions are contributing to it, particularly pumping these greenhouse gases, the fossil fuels, that we've really only seen in the last 100 years or so since the dawn of the Industrial Revolution. That's actually measurable in the polar ice cap. I interviewed a climate scientist from Scripps, and I said, how can you tell it's man-made? He said, well, because it's measurable. It's a different form, a different organic form of the carbon dioxide emissions than what you would see naturally from, say, seepage in the ocean. It's only been around since then. So it's just nonsense, frankly. This was my degree, was in environmental studies, and I will say that anyone who thinks it's not real, who thinks it's not man-made, really hasn't looked at the science.
I think that's right, but also, even if someone doesn't agree with the science, it still doesn't make any sense to subject ourselves to a lawsuit. And and following state law should be non-negotiable.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Now, you're also an advocate for building affordable homes near transit. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I've been working on affordable housing policy for a number of years since I started working for Governor Brown. And I think that's just a fundamental challenge that we have in La Mesa and also, you know, throughout California is we don't have enough affordable places for people to live. I know people who've moved out to La Mesa because it's more affordable than where they were living before.
Yeah.
And I know people who've left La Mesa because it's no longer affordable to them now. And so we have to have some policy to create more affordable places to live. There's some state policies that make affordable housing more viable and easier to build that we need to make sure that we're faithfully implementing here in La Mesa.
I think most everybody is for affordable housing, for encouraging development near transit. But there have been some issues in La Mesa in recent years about a developer who wanted to build an 18-story high-rise, and then I think he scaled it down to 9. I understand that as a candidate, you cannot comment on a specific project because you may have to vote for it. You don't want a conflict of interest. But I think it's a fair question to ask. If a developer is seeking a variance from the city's height limit, which is currently four stories in and near the downtown historic village area. Is that something that you would ever consider granting? And if so, under what circumstances? Do you think there should be some limits on just, you know, how high you might go?
Yeah. And I think that the answer shouldn't be just about height limits, but about any sort of variance or adjustment from the land use rules. Mm-hmm. I think that we should be telling developers if they want any sort of special forgiveness from the rules, then they really need to come to the city with an explanation of what they're going to be offering in exchange. So it's not just a giving, you know, you don't want to do just a giveaway, but you want to say, okay, if you want to go more than four, if you want to go to five or what have you, then show us what you're going to offer. And so if a developer comes in and says, hey, I want to go to five or six, but I'm going to give you this great pedestrian walkway or this park facility, you know, those are things that maybe we'd be willing to entertain, but it's got to be a fair deal.
Yeah. Is there a certain height at which you just think it's no way that it's too high?
Yeah, I think it has to be in the context of the particular development. In that particular area, it's adjacent to a six-story building and an eight-story building, right? And so is four an absolute cap? Maybe not. I mean, 18 is clearly too high, right? And I think that the best judge is whether or not the neighbors are comfortable with it. Right?
There you go. So public input is important, public opinion.
Absolutely. And when you see situations where the public is coming unglued about some development, then that generally means that the project is really out of scale. And so I think we have to, and oftentimes it's incumbent on those developers to do their homework and to do their legwork to have a dialogue with those neighbors before something moves forward.
Yeah. We should mention, speaking of community conversations, that you are co-founder of the La Mesa Conversations Group. Tell us just real briefly the vision behind that and why you felt it was important to encourage more public participation.
Yeah, so civic engagement has always been very important to me. So we created La Mesa Conversations as a forum to have a dialogue about civic issues that could be outside of government. So instead of the only place where we talk about civic issues being at City Hall, where there's a, you know, the public speakers only have 2 minutes and that kind of thing, we can do some events and talk about some things and have some really smart conversations about issues that are affecting all of us.
Very good. You also co-founded the San Diego Leadership Alliance, which was aimed at training young professionals in the region to get involved with civic life. You've also been recognized as an up-and-comer by a number of magazines covering the business community. You were named 40 Under 40 by San Diego Metropolitan Magazine. You were named among the top young attorneys by San Diego Daily Transcript and by the Transcript as 40 Under 40 business professionals. So congratulations on that.
Yeah, thank you.
So speaking of business, La Mesa has really suffered in recent years with the more or less demise of the La Mesa Village Merchants Association. Granted, they went through some hard times between the economy and the streetscape shutting down a lot of the businesses, traffic for a year. But last year, they got into trouble where they got the city to basically extend them credit on the Oktoberfest. They were not able to pay that back. It was a lot of money for security and stuff. And basically, they may be around on paper, but they're really not able to do anything. This year, the city took over the running of the Oktoberfest, and they've outsourced that to a private company now, a marketing company, so we'll see how that goes. But what do you think needs to be done to revitalize the business community in the historic downtown district particularly?
Yeah, so I think one of the keys to making a business district like this successful is to have some sort of entity organization to represent those businesses and to attract new businesses. So the Village Merchants Association was trying to fill that void and it didn't and it's no longer here. We need something else to replace it. And there's some really great examples that we can borrow from. You know, neighborhoods like North Park have been really successful bringing new investment, making it a vibrant, walkable neighborhood. We can and should have something like that representing those businesses.
What should the role of the city, in this case La Mesa, be to encourage or foster a new business group to step forward to replace the old one? And are there any efforts underway already?
Yeah, I think there are some things that the city can do. I mean, one is just being a convener to be able to say, hey, to the businesses, we think that you need something external to us that can advocate for your interests, and doing whatever the city can to bring those people together to have that conversation. But then also, you know, if there's other support that they need, if it's, you know, some startup capital, so some of those other sorts of things, I'm very willing to entertain that. I think that could be an important thing. There are some efforts right now to create a new association for those businesses to identify and to try to figure out how they can sort of recreate a new entity. Mm-hmm. And I think that's terrific, but the city has to make some strong signals to them that they're in support of it and that they're not worried about having something like that.
Who's taking the lead on that?
So my understanding is that it's some of the business owners who are doing some new projects in the village.
Like the five new restaurants that are coming in?
Yes, yeah, but they've also had conversations with other existing businesses to try to get their participation mm-hmm. and input. I believe they've already filed some paperwork to form an organization. I think it's still very much, you know, in the works at this point. But
like a new nonprofit business group?
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting.
Yeah, but that's the kind of thing that we need more of. Yeah. And I'll just say, too, that a successful group like this doesn't just advocate for those businesses, doesn't just help them get permits, but they also put on events, they also program, they also bring people into the village. And that's something that the city is doing now. You know, they're hosting Oktoberfest and they've hired a consultant to do it, and that's fine. But ideally, you want this to be done by the businesses themselves. Businesses are much better at figuring out who their customers are and how to get them there. This is not the sort of thing that's best done within government.
Well, there are some very successful business people getting established in La Mesa now. Certainly, we have one cone restaurant already open and a second one on the verge of opening right now. And that's one of the most successful restaurateurs in all mm-hmm. of San Diego County.
Yeah, no, I think it's a reflection of an understanding that it's a maturing downtown and there's a lot of opportunity mm-hmm. and that there's a customer base that's really interested in having some new options to explore.
Yeah, maybe we'll be the restaurant row of East County, just like the gas lamp downtown.
Let's hope so, yeah.
Sounds good. A couple of other issues. Let's talk a little bit about police and public safety, traffic issues and so forth. What do you have to say on that?
Yeah, so public safety is extremely important. You know, we spend a little more than half of La Mesa's budget every year on police and fire. We've got to make sure that we keep committed to strong public safety and fast emergency response times. I have certainly heard from a number of quarters that we have some challenges with retention, especially in our police department.
Yeah, a lot of turnover.
Yeah, it's a lot of turnover, and they're pretty successful about getting keeping the total number of officers there, but it's through with a lot of people coming in and out. And this is a challenge that other departments in the region are also having. And it's, you know, it's for a lot of it, it's because of housing costs, right? And so that people are getting pulled away to other departments where they're paying them the same, but the rents are a lot cheaper, mm-hmm. right? And so we have to make sure that we have competitive pay and benefits for police and fire. But then we also need to think about what other things we're able to do in order to keep people here and to keep them invested and have their careers here in La Mesa.
Yeah. How about traffic safety? Do you see any issues there?
Yeah, I think it's about, you know, 1 to 3 traffic fatalities every year that happen in La Mesa. It's not as bad as some other cities in the region, but, you know, these are people's lives. And we should be designing our streets so that they're safe, and we should let no traffic fatality happen if they can all be solved if we do these things correctly. One of the things that I do at my work at Circulate San Diego is advocate for an initiative called Vision Zero, which is a commitment that we're getting cities. We've got the city of San Diego to make this. We're asking other cities in the region to make this, to commit to zero traffic fatalities within 10 years.
Wow.
And it sounds really ambitious, but it's doable. And other cities that have made investments in how they design their streets, how they do enforcement for their traffic law, and how they educate drivers and pedestrians about safety have shown some really significant reductions in traffic fatalities and serious injuries. So we know that there's an intersection that generates a number of pedestrian fatalities, then we should rethink about how we design that intersection.
Okay. A couple of other issues. Last week, the city of La Mesa, the city council, responded to 2 grand jury reports that were critical of the city. One of them had called for a Citizens Oversight Board for police, which they basically said, we don't need because we think that the internal investigations here is fine. We haven't had a lot of complaints. The other was on homelessness. And on that one, the city essentially said, we think we're already doing enough. And other than joining the Regional Continuum of Care Council or something, committee or whatever it is, they really didn't, you know, seem to suggest a lot of new initiatives to help the homeless. What are your views? Do you agree or disagree with the council's actions on those two issues?
On the police oversight boards, you know, those have been successful in a lot of large cities. I'm not convinced that it's as necessary in a place like La Mesa. You know, if you go to the city council meeting, you know, every other week, you know, this chief of police is there. And, you know, he's right there. He's making a report. He's talking to people. So I think there's there's probably enough connection right there.
We're not Ferguson. We haven't had these allegations of police misconduct here that I'm aware of.
Yeah, that's right. And so, I'm not interested in just creating, you know, looking after solutions in search of problems, right? So I don't think that's the right approach. You know, whereas for homelessness, you know, that one's, you know, a little more challenging. You know, right now we see that the county grand jury report showed that the city of La Mesa was spending zero money on homelessness and the county was spending zero money on homelessness in La Mesa.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But yet we are generating $200,000 a year in costs from responding to service calls related to homelessness.
Yeah. The Chief Vasquez with the La Mesa police indicated the officers are spending about 20% of their time dealing with homeless people. So it's not free. Not spending the money officially for homelessness doesn't mean you're not spending it. It's just kind of hidden in some of those other budget items. So what's the answer?
Yeah. So the answer, well, first of all, the answer is that the police still need to respond to those things and that they're doing their job by responding to it. But we also need to rethink how we're addressing this. We want to try to address this on the front end and not on the back end. We want to try to help these people who are homeless so that they're not creating problems that we have to deal with on the back end. That's one. But, you know, the other thing is that if we took that $200,000 and put it on homelessness services in La Mesa, it still wouldn't be nearly enough to address the problems.
Sure.
So we have to go to the county and say, hey, we need more help out here.
Yeah.
So they're very focused on some of the larger concentrations of homelessness in the city of San Diego and the city of Oceanside and some of those other places. But we need resources here, too.
What about going for some grants? I know the grand jury indicated that there is some federal grant money available to help with the homeless, but a lot of the East County cities hadn't even asked for it.
Yeah, there's some grant opportunities, but, you know, I don't think we should just be banking on the possibility of grants. I mean, the county gets a lot of federal money every year that they're obligated to spend in the region. And small cities like La Mesa don't get that money directly. We get it, our share is given to the county and the county is supposed to be spending it. So we need to be a stronger voice at the county and say to them that we need their help and to not be complacent with what we're already getting.
Yeah. Speaking of stronger voices, I see on your website that you're calling for the city to change its city council meetings to the evening hours so that more people can participate.
Yes, absolutely. So every other council meeting, they begin at 4 p.m. and that's just not an option for people to come to who work a regular 9-to-5 job. So we should be encouraging people to participate in city government. We want people to show up to the city council meetings. And so I think we should start them at 6 o'clock. All of them should start at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, Lemon Grove does that. Why can't La Mesa?
That's right.
Okay. You also have some ideas, I understand, on bringing back the Human Relations Committee. Tell me why.
Yeah, so the council voted recently to fold their Human Relations Committee into another committee and to not have it stand alone. And I think this is reflective of a more inward looking culture and mentality on city council right now. So the Human Relations Committee is the committee that's supposed to be out there, advocating for diversity. It says right in its, charter that it's, to advocate for fair housing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so getting rid of that, you know, removes that voice.
They used to do things years ago. For many, many years, the Human Relations Committee put together a multicultural festival in La Mesa that was very, very nice with the Martin Luther King choir and all the different ethnicities coming out and doing song and dance and food and so forth, and it was suspended supposedly, I thought, just for a year when they had the centennial that fell in the same month, and then it just kind of quietly fell by the wayside, and yet the city is more diverse than ever. We have a lot of people from around the world starting to move in, so it just struck me as kind of an odd decision.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's not that they didn't have any reason to do it. The commission probably was being less active, but the solution for... And that's going to happen from time to time. The volunteer committee is going to be, you know, more or less active depending on the leadership from year to year. But the solution to a committee like that becoming less active is not to put it away, but instead to bring new people on board and to recruit new people to participate. And I think we need to be really open and eager for that in La Mesa. There's plenty of people who want to get involved. We just got to make sure that they know that we want them to get involved.
Yeah. Now, you've also criticized the city for a lack of transparency on the process to replace the city manager.
Yeah. So the council hired a new city manager a month or so ago without any public process. So there was an announcement that the outgoing city manager was retiring. In the same meeting, they announced his replacement.
We should note that this is a new council with, you know, major changeovers in the last couple of elections, and that in the past, La Mesa always did have a very robust, open process when they chose a city manager. It would be, you know, advertised all over, there'd be hearings, and the public would have a chance to say whether they liked the replacement candidate or didn't like them or whatever, and this time they filled it from within without any of that.
Yeah, that's right. And let me be perfectly clear that, you know, the person they hired seems very competent and qualified, and I suspect she'll do a great job.
Yeah.
So, but the problem is the process. What would have been nicer is if we had an opportunity for people to come and tell us what they liked about the existing city manager and what they might like the new city manager to do better or differently. Hiring a city manager is one of the most important things that a small city government does, that and pass a budget.
Yeah.
And so we have to make sure that those big decisions are done in an open and public way that encourages more input.
When La Mesa passed the bond measure a few years ago for new public buildings, they built the new fire station, the new police station, and so forth, and what was supposed to be a temporary library, but lately the new council has balked at building the new permanent library that many citizens thought they were going to get. There's also not been a civic center, but there's some people who think a new civic center should also be eventually built. What are your views on those two projects?
Yeah, so the La Mesa Library is really packed. It's really utilized very well. Every time I go in there, there's no place to sit. Everyone's using it. So that's a good sign, but it also is reflective of the need to have more space. So I'm very committed to saying that if we're going to do any sort of civic center improvement, that incorporating more space to the library needs to be a part of it.
Okay. And how about the civic center?
Well, I'm open to the idea of doing a new civic center. They have done some financial studies to identify how it could be paid for. And I've worked in government. I used to work in an old building at the Department of Housing and Community Development in Sacramento. There were bats in that building.
Oh, no.
Right? And one of the young lawyers there had an animal die in the wall next to his office. It was terrible. and that infected employee morale, and it was not good. And so it does matter where your government works.
That's true.
Yeah. So I'm open to that. I haven't made up my mind, I guess, about whether or not we should do it or how we should do it.
Open to the proposal if it made financial sense.
That's right. But if we are going to move forward with it, it's, you know, one of my prerequisites is going to be that we incorporate some additional space for the library.
Okay. Tell us what endorsements you've had that you're most proud of.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think one of my favorite endorsements is from former Senator Christine Kehoe, who is one of my bosses and several points in my life. I've helped her out on a couple of her campaigns, and I was an intern for her when she was in the state legislature. Her sort of mentee, Tony Atkins, is also a supporter, an endorsement of mine.
Former Speaker of the Assembly in California.
Yep. And she's going to be a member of the Senate very soon. I have endorsements from Todd Gloria and David Alvarez, both on the San Diego City Council, and Mary Sessom, who's the mayor of Lemon Grove.
This is a nonpartisan race, as are all local city council races, but that said, your opponents have been endorsed by the Republican Party for years, and it should be noted that you're a Democrat, and La Mesa now has a majority Democratic registration, I understand. Is that still correct?
Well, it's a plurality, so it's about 40% Democrats and about maybe 35% Republicans.
Interesting, and yet it's 5 Republicans on the council. Do you think that the time is right for a Democrat to be elected in La Mesa?
Yes, absolutely. And it is a nonpartisan election. I'm not just going to be talking to Democrats. I'm certainly not going to govern in a way that's only going to be appealing to Democrats. Mm-hmm. But President Obama, when he got elected in La Mesa in 2012 and 2008, he won by 10 percentage points. So there's actually a strong Democratic constituency here in La Mesa that doesn't currently have any representation.
Well, I want to give you the final word here, Colin. What else would you like our listeners to know about you or your candidacy, and where can they go to find out more information?
Well, if anyone is interested in learning more about me or my campaign, you can go to colinparent.org. We have a great-looking website that a friend of mine from who I met at Fuerte Elementary helped me design, and we've got information about the issues that I'm concerned about and how you can volunteer, and we'd love to have as much support and information as possible. And if someone wants to send me an email or give me a call, my email and phone number are right there.
And listeners, of course, we're nonpartisan radio here, and so we certainly will be extending an invitation to the two incumbents in this race, as well as any other candidates who may come forward before the close of the filing deadline for the La Mesa City Council. Again, if you just tuned in, we've been interviewing Colin Parent, an attorney and a candidate running for the La Mesa City Council. Colin, thank you so much for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
Thank you.